and the risk of the spread of COVID is intense.
I want to thank you so much, Stuart Schrader, for being with us, author of Badges Without Borders, How Global Counterinsurgency Transformed American Policing. And that does it for today's broadcast. Today would have been Breonna Taylor's 27th birthday. She was shot to death by Louisville police inside her own apartment in Louisville, Kentucky, in March. The officers have not been charged. That does it for our show. To see our whole discussion of the case of Breonna Taylor, go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Working with as few people on site as possible. Majority of our amazing team working from home. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Adriana Contreras, Maria Tarasena, I'm Amy Goodman.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, a memorial service will be held for George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The Reverend Al Sharpton is expected to give the eulogy. After 10 fervent days of action across the United States, protests in response to the police killing of 46-year-old George Floyd continue to rage on. On Wednesday, June 3rd, demonstrations were held around the country as the uprising continues. In Los Angeles, thousands converged in downtown Los Angeles, many outside the office of District Attorney Jackie Lacey. She has been criticized for not prosecuting more police officers for misconduct and is currently in a runoff for re-election. The Los Angeles protest yesterday was one of the largest in the country, reports are saying. Similar marches were held in Long Beach and other Southern California cities. And indeed, protesters left downtown LA and marched into Hollywood. In Washington, D.C., thousands upon thousands also participated in peaceful protests where a contingent of federal agents, troops, even police, prison guards from Texas were brought in, were there to basically confront the protesters. The protesters remained peaceful nevertheless. There in the nation's capital, federal authorities formed a line pushing protesters away from the park near the White House, where rallies had been held for days. And for the first time, rows of military personnel stood face to face with the crowd, with no physical barriers separating them. In New York and Minneapolis, thousands more took part in peaceful street demonstrations demanding justice and end to racism, despite the increased police and, in some cases, National Guard presence. All of this comes as federal authorities on Wednesday upgraded murder charges against Derek Chauvin, the police officer who killed George Floyd, by pressing his knee into his neck. Also, three other former Minneapolis police officers involved in the murder have now also been charged in Floyd's death. Also, a break happening with Trump in the U.S. military. His defense secretary, Epsi, saying that he is opposed to using the U.S. military to put down protests. And former defense secretary Jim Mattis heavily criticized Donald Trump, accusing him of deliberately trying to divide the country. On Thursday, June 4th, Senate Democrats will gather for a lengthy moment of silence in the Capitol Visitor Center's Emancipation Hall. The moment will last nearly 9 minutes, the same length of time that police officers were pressing onto George Floyd. Also, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam plans to announce that he will remove the statue of the Confederate General Robert E. Lee from its site on Monument Avenue and put it in storage, this according to an official in his administration. And similarly, in Philadelphia, workers removed a statue of Philadelphia's controversial former mayor Frank Rizzo from its place of honor across from City Hall early on Wednesday morning. Frank Rizzo was an overt symbol of white police officers' brutal treatment of black people and other people of color, including the bombing, the infamous bombing of the MOVE organization. Let us go now to a couple of clips here. One is Dante Stillworth. You would hear his voice, and then you will hear the voice of Malcolm X, very relevant for what is happening today. Let's go to those clips now.
I look at things like the president and what his language is. He speaks as all protesters are bad. He says he stands with peaceful protesters at the Rose Garden as we were literally on a split screen. You've seen people getting their heads beat with shields, with batons. They were firing tear gas and rubber bullets. I was in that area. So that flies in the face of what he just said. He's totally gaslighting the country.
Yeah.
You know, but again, the language that he uses for the neo-Nazis that were marching in Charlottesville, he said they were very fine people. And then he tried to catch himself and say on both sides, as if that mattered at all, because we saw people there the day before with marching down the night before marching down the street with tiki torches screaming Jews will not replace us. No, those are not very fine people. Those are anti-Semites. Those are anti-Semites. Neo-Nazis. And so when they hear that, okay, we've got the president on our side.
Yeah.
When cops hear Trump say, you know, rough them up, don't when you're putting their heads in the car, don't put your hand on top of their head, just, you know, I can do it, I say you can do it, like, and then he got a huge applause, like, mm-hmm. Is something that he's obviously throwing gas on the fire, but deep down, you know, we have a lot of issues, and I think more people are starting to wake up to these issues, especially after this modern day lynching of George Floyd that we saw in Minneapolis. People are fed up, and people want to know what they can do to help, what they can do to understand. I think people are learning more.
Everyone loves a fighter. They respect a fighter. And but at the same time that they admire these fighters, they encourage the so-called Negro in America to get his desires fulfilled with a sit-in stroke or a passive approach or a love your enemy approach or pray for those who despitefully use you. This is insane. And we feel as Muslims, until we see white people practicing this nonviolence, until we see white people take Pearl Harbor. When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, the American white man didn't say, pray for the Japanese and let them now bomb Manhattan or Staten Island. No, they said, praise the Lord, but pass the ammunition. When we study the entire history of the white man, he believes in violently defending himself. But when we study the history of the American so-called Negro, who is trying to get his rights, whenever he has an organization that is integrated, which means it has white advisors who are in top position, usually he's being encouraged to be nonviolent, to be passive, and to be loving, and to be patient. But we have never seen the white man himself display these same characteristics or methods when he's trying to get his own goals accomplished.
Alrighty, that the voice of Malcolm X. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. What I'd like to do now is to go to, before welcoming our guest, is to go to a clip from Malcolm X about we have experienced the American nightmare. Let's go to that clip now.
And when I speak, I don't speak as a Democrat or a Republican, nor an American. I speak as a victim of America's so-called democracy. You and I have never seen democracy. All we've seen is hypocrisy. When we open our eyes today and look around America, we see America not through the eyes of someone who has enjoyed the fruits of Americanism. We see America through the eyes of someone who has been the victim of Americanism. We don't see any American dream. We've experienced only the American nightmare. We haven't benefited from America's democracy. We've only suffered from America's hypocrisy. And the generation that's coming up now can see it and are not afraid to say it. If you go to jail, so what? If you're black, you were born in jail. If you black, you were born in jail. In the North as well as the South. Stop talking about the South. Long as you're south of the Canadian border, you're south. Don't call Governor Wallace a Dixie governor. Romney is a Dixie governor. $22 million black victims of Americanism are waking up. And they're gaining a new political consciousness, becoming politically mature. And as they become, develop this political maturity, they're able to see the recent trends in these political elections. They see that the whites are so evenly divided that every time they vote, the race is so close they have to go back and count the votes all over again. And which means that any block, any minority that has a block of votes that stick together is in a strategic position. Either way you go, that's who gets it. You're in a position to determine who go to the White House and who stay in the doghouse. You're the one who has that power. You can keep Johnson in Washington, D.C., or you can send him back to his Texas cotton patch. You're the one who sent Kennedy to Washington. You're the one who put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years. And all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they've brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last. Because you're a chump.
All righty, there you go. I'd like to now, Malcolm X, always the words of Malcolm X, assassinated so long ago, but nevertheless, his words very, very relevant to what is happening today. I would now like to welcome Ozawa Benishi Albert, who is the movement building coordinator of the Indigenous Environmental Network. She is from the Yuchi and Anishinaabe Nations in what is now referred to as Oklahoma. Ozawa, welcome.
Thank you. Benishi is fine. I'm honored to be
here. Benicia is okay.
Yes. Yeah.
All righty. Well, really delighted to have you on. We here at the show, we're longtime supporters of the Indigenous Environmental Network. And I saw that you all have, along with many others, have issued a statement about what happened with George Floyd. Tell us why.
I think, you know, the statement came from, you know, our whole staff and board, and was really a place of understanding the pain, the hurt, the frustration, the anger of what it means to be brutalized by the police state. So it became that much more important for us to lift up what's happening right now, and lift up and center Black voices and Black Lives Matter and the movement that is happening now, to say we feel the struggle, we know what that means, and we're standing in solidarity.
Right, and you know, there is, you know, much was made of the fact that in the early days of the uprising in Minneapolis, that one of the structures that was burned, in fact, was an NGO that was a Native American center. And, you know, the media were kind of blowing that up. And we know, I'm of African descent myself, that for the longest time, I mean, since enslaved people were brought over, but to the what is now the United States, that there are attempts to divide Indigenous people and people of African descent. So your comments in terms of what happened in Minneapolis and the, you know, your thoughts on that in terms of how that was being used to whip up divisions.
In Minneapolis is one of the urban centers that many Indian people were moved to when they were sort of moving Indian people out of reservations to be a labor force and move to a lot of cities. Minneapolis was one of them, Chicago, Bay Area. Lots of these cities have large Native populations. And so there's a long, long history. I mean, besides being traditionally Native lands, they're Dakota and Anishinaabe people in that area. That city has a long history of Native community. And there's been long work that has happened between African American community and Native American community in terms of, you know, policing their own neighborhoods, you know, solidarity work, doing community patrols, safety, making sure people are safe, and you know, unified work around police brutality. And so that community space that was lost was not lost because of a deliberate attack on Native people. That community was lost. That community center, the McGeezy media operation was lost because of a fire in an adjacent building. But there had been people there helping and supporting, Indian people helping and supporting, like protecting that building. It was lost. You know, I have a family member who works for that organization, and the loss is tragic for sure. But people are very clear about the real reason that building was lost. One, that, you know, the fire that caught it was an adjacent building, but they're very clear about the rage and anger against police brutality. They know the origins of that. They know the root cause of what happened. And as tragic as it is, people are still building relationships and we'll rebuild that community center.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, in Los Angeles, unlike what happened in 1992 or in the rebellion in 1965, the Watts Rebellion, most of, you know, stores, etc., where people went in and took goods, were not in those communities, not in South LA, not in the Black community or the Latino community, but it was basically in the more affluent parts of town. Clearly, that was not the case that happened in Minneapolis. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about, Benishi, is we know that these police shootings and police brutality, this is not only something happening to Black people. And people are finding out more about it now because of what is caught on video. But just share with us a little bit of what you know about similar things that have happened in to Indigenous people, including not only murder, but law enforcement brutality.
Yeah, there's a long history there. There was a government department that dealt with a war against Indian people. Right, so it exists in our government structure, and you know that has not changed dramatically over the years. We're still seeing the plight of missing and murdered Indigenous women. We're still seeing a high incarceration rate of Native people in the prison system, even though we make up a very small population, a small percentage of the population overall. There are states where Native people are like the highest population incarcerated, and you know the deaths at the hands of police brutality is highest amongst Native people, just based on, you know, our populace size. Now that you know sometimes lends to people having complex feelings about it in Indian community, because our communities are brutalized at a higher rate because we're such a small people, and people have complex feelings alike about it because they support Black Lives Matter and what that means, and sometimes they feel angst of like, well, what about our people and what happens, and you know when are people going to hear the brutality that has happened to our people, but they also know that this moment is about dismantling the structure, the structure of the police state, and so they realize that the officer that is being charged had previous cases, including killing a Native American man in Minneapolis, and so that exists and it's there, and you know it causes a lot of hurt and it opens up old wounds for people to see this happening again and again and again, and by the same officers who have killed and brutalized Native people. It happens in Minneapolis. It happens in Chicago, in Alaska, in Oklahoma. It happens in reservation communities. It happens, you know, in border towns of reservation communities, and it's a hard thing for us to think about. But it is very clear for us that like that police state is something that we need to change and move. And not only that, but the brutalization that happens at the hands of protests, like what's happening with the protests right now is really painful to watch. And many of the people who were part of the uprising that happened at Standing Rock, you know, they remember the tear gas. They remember being, you know, shot at with rubber bullets. They remember the water cannons being shot at them in freezing temperatures. They know what that brutality is, and to see that happening again, that the protection of, the protection of pipelines, the protection of, you know, material goods, the protection of capitalism is more important than the protection of actual lives.
Looking at the statement from the Indigenous Environmental Network, by the way, for those of you who may not know, is an alliance of Indigenous peoples whose mission it is to protect the sacredness of Mother Earth from contamination and exploitation by strengthening, maintaining, and respecting Indigenous teachings and natural laws. And that has been very widely implemented. And the Indigenous Environmental Network is currently supporting the Week of Action in Defense of Black Lives. This is a call by the Movement for Black Lives, which is a coming together not only of the specific Black Lives Matter organizations, but a number of Black organizations across the country. BYP 100, Blackout, and a number of others have come together. But what I'd like to do, Benishi, and then get some thoughts from you, is to share with our audience some of what the Indigenous Environmental Network statement says. It says, it is from a place of deep love and power that we declare Indigenous solidarity and action in support of Black liberation and Black power. With strong hearts, minds, and actions, we stand and uplift our love for and defense of Black lives. In this moment, we lift up and center Black voices and Black Lives Matter movement. This does not mean that police brutality inflicted upon Native communities is any less crucial to address. It does not mean that our struggles are any less important. In fact, standing in solidarity and supporting Black Lives Matter addresses the root causes of that brutality, systemic racism and white supremacy. Dismantling these systems is the work we need to do together. But another thing that quite struck me, Benishi, it was a very beautifully written and heartfelt statement. It also says that as we continue to fight back in solidarity against colonization and white supremacist ideologies, we acknowledge the need to confront the anti-Black racism that exists within our own communities, our own families, and within ourselves. And that is, and then you further say, we pledge to embrace the ways in which our histories and families have been forever linked by blood, struggle, and love. And I was struck by that, Benishi, because on the one hand, we know the history. We know that a lot of us of African descent who came into the Americas, not only in the United States, but in Central and Latin America and the Caribbean region, got solidarity and help and support from Indigenous people who, in some cases, even fighting together, and also helping us to transport our spiritual practices, the herbs, et cetera, needed to adapt it to the Americas. So there's that history on the one hand. And then on the other hand, there is that shameful history of the Buffalo Soldiers, where Black soldiers were used in the so-named Indian Wars. So there is, there is that coming together, and there is that healing that we have to work towards in terms of Indigenous and communities and Black communities here. Your thoughts on this?
We do have a long history, a shared history of oppression in this country. That's absolutely clear. And part of that oppression in this by the hands of the state has been about creating division between Black and Indigenous peoples. And that history goes back to colonial times, right? It goes back to, like, we can't see unity between these bodies. Let's create divisions. So those sort of forms of division have continued. In as much as we have been working in solidarity in the movement, there still exist some of those threads, some of those things around recognizing Black people with Indigenous blood, such as the freedmen, and some of those have existed between sort of tensions around reparations and what does it mean to support reparations for Black people, particularly when it involves land that was traditionally that was traditionally Native people's land that was taken and removed from them. So, you know, there's a lot of division there that has been institutionalized in our communities. And so when we say we want to, you know, that we're working and working and being in solidarity, it also means that we have to make a commitment to principled struggle, right? To that we make a commitment to have hard conversations and work through them with the intention of this is building, you know, for our communities to be stronger and to be stronger together. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that still exist there, and a lot, you know, like what I was saying, that sometimes, you know, we're like, well, what, you know, what about us? And we're such a small population in comparison to Black people in this country, in our own homeland, right? And so that, like, people see, like, oh, well, they can have so much more than we can. You know, we can elect a Native American president. We don't have that populist size to do that. And so it causes some tensions from time, but it doesn't cause a block for us to have relationships and to have solidarity. And that solidarity is deep and long. It has long history to the civil rights movement. It has long history to the early days of the American Indian Movement and Black Panthers and Brown Berets. It has long history that is deep, invested in its deep, you know, relationship in building around environmental justice work. And you know, there's lots of work that we have been working and having hard struggles to have understanding of each other and a commitment to having understanding of each other and to carry each other's struggles. Black Lives Matter showed up at Standing Rock, and they came and they threw their support in and had people come and support. And that means a lot. You know, people hold those moments, and that wasn't the only moment that we've had solidarity together. And people hold those moments together and the communities together and holding that relationship of solidarity. And as far as the state is concerned, that is a very good, dangerous relationship that they don't want to see happen. To have Black Indigenous unity means that there is a greater strength of those two communities being bound together by blood, bound together by, you know, blood, sweat, and tears for this land, for this home, for our homeland. And we intend to try to keep those bonds strong.
Yes, and also, Benishi, finally, for people who want to read your entire statement, we actually are going to post it up on the Sojourner Truth website, but also to know more about the work that the Indigenous Environmental Network is doing, what should they do?
You can reach our website at ienearth.org, Indigenous Environmental Network, with lots of other work that is happening there. You'll find it, but the statement is there, and you know, and some, we, you know, we, this is really hard and heartfelt for us. You know, yeah. our staff are like working and trying to, you know, lift up actions that are happening in Indigenous communities in support of Black Lives Matter. They're trying to lift up stories that are people sharing of Indigenous people marching in some of the marches that are happening in various cities across the country.
And, yeah.
But yeah, you can see that www.ienearth.org.
All righty. Well, I'm afraid we are out of time. We are going to have to leave it there. But we certainly, as a member of the Black community myself, really appreciate the solidarity and understand the importance of our communities, you know, getting across those divisions and recognizing anti-Black sentiment that is present in so many communities across the world, but nevertheless finding our way to be support of each other and realizing that we are in a similar boat. Ozawa Benishi Albert, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a quick station break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I'm gonna keep on. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Check us out on our website on sotrueradio.org. If you're on Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook, and our handle on Twitter and Instagram at SoTrueRadio. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And of course, we're continuing our coverage of the uprising going on across the country following a spate of police killings, the most recent George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Minnesota. Of course, there have been killings also in Brunswick, Georgia, with Ahmaud Arbery, and also in Louisville, Kentucky, with Breonna Taylor. I'd like to welcome our next guest as we're continuing our coverage and the mobilizing people are doing around the country against anti-black sentiment, against racism, against police killings and brutality. I'd like to now welcome Yvette Ale, grassroots organizer, LGBTQ community leader, and artist with 15 years of organizing and advocacy experience. Her history growing up in Southern California as an undocumented person and as the child of an incarcerated person with behavioral health needs has informed her activism throughout her career. She's the campaign coordinator for Justice, as campaign coordinator for Justice LA. She led the coalition of historic victories, including ending LA County's $3.5 billion jail expansion plan in 2019 and the adoption of Los Angeles County groundbreaking Alternatives to Incarceration Roadmap in 2020. She now serves as the Senior Policy Lead for Dignity and Power Now, a Los Angeles-based grassroots organization that fights for the dignity and power of all incarcerated people, their families, and communities. Yvette Ale, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so what I'd like you to do in the time that we have, first, let us start about this event that you all are planning. It's a protest event, but it's a little bit different. That's going to be happening in downtown Los Angeles on Friday, June the 5th. Tell us what is going to be happening and why. What is the purpose of this protest?
Yes. So on Friday, we're having our Rose from Concrete action. And as organizers, we've been thinking about accessibility. A lot of our community members may not be able to physically march on the streets. They might be concerned with COVID. They might have a loved one that's immunocompromised at home. So we were thinking of ways to engage our community members through creative action. So we're asking the people of Los Angeles to deliver roses to the steps of the Hall of Justice on Friday between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m., a procession of roses in honor of the people that have been killed by sheriff violence. And we're really trying to connect the dots through the action around systemic racism and systemic violence by law enforcement, because violence can happen on the streets, but it also happens in the shadows of the LA County jail system. Last year alone, 8 people died at the hands of the sheriff department inside of the jails. And this week, the first person died of COVID-19 inside of LA County jails. And so violence takes many forms in the hands of law enforcement and system actors, and we want to honor the lives that we've lost on Friday.
That is amazing. I love this protest, the Rose from Concrete, and honoring the lives lost, not only the recent police killings, but also the suffering and also killing of people that happens from sheriff violence inside the LA County jails. So again, what you're saying is that people could just go to what address during what hours? And you're also asking them to snap a picture, right, as they're doing this?
Correct, yeah. So folks can drive up. Some organizers and activists have already engaged in car actions. So this is a similar action in that you drive up. We will have greeters. You can hand them roses, and we will lay them on the steps of the Hall of Justice. And then you take a picture.
So people don't have to park and get out. They can drive up, and you all will have people there that will collect the roses.
Exactly. You don't even need to park. And we encourage folks not to park, actually, to be able to exercise social distancing. So just hand the roses, and we will take them and put them on the steps, and we will have family members there and healers holding space. And we will be beaming the action through Instagram Live. So from 11:30 to 12, you can hear from family members impacted by incarceration. Their loved ones have died at the hands of law enforcement inside the jails. Formerly incarcerated people and organizers will be speaking from 11:30 to 12 through our Instagram Live. And our handle is at JusticeLANow on Instagram.
I get requests all the time about where are protests happening today, right? So this Friday, the 5th, and at the Hall of Justice, 211 West Temple Street. And what we are going to do, Yvette, we are going to post this information up on our website, and we appreciate the work that you're doing and all the victories, the hard-fought victories that you have been involved in, and the work of Dignity and Power. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you.
All righty. What we're going to do now is we're going to wrap up this show with, we want to hear a little bit more of Malcolm X. Let me just fit in a bit more of Malcolm X.
There's only one way to be a first-class citizen. There's only one way to be independent. There's only one way to be free. It's not something that someone gives to you. It's something that you take. Nobody can give you independence. Nobody can give you freedom. Nobody can give you equality or justice or anything. If you're a man, you take it. If you can't take it, you don't deserve it. Nobody can give it to you. So if you and I want freedom, if we want independence, if we want respect, if we want recognition, we obey the law. We be peaceful. But at the same time, at any moment that you and I are involved in any kind of action that is legal, that is in accord with our civil rights, in accord with the courts of this land, in accord with the Constitution, when all of these things are on our side and we still can't get it, it's because we aren't on our own side. We yet don't realize the real price necessary to pay to see that these things are enforced where we're concerned. And until we realize this, they won't be enforced where we're concerned. We have to let the people in Mississippi, as well as Mississippi, New York, and elsewhere, know that freedom comes to us either by ballots or by bullets. That's the only way freedom is gotten. Freedom is gotten by ballots or bullets. These are the only two avenues, the only two roads, the only two methods, the only two means, either ballots or bullets. And when you know that, yes, when you know it, then you are careful how you use the word freedom. As long as you think we're gonna sing up on some, you come in and sing. I watch you. Those of you who are singing, are you also willing to do some swinging for some of these? No, this is true. They've always said that I'm anti-white. I'm for anybody who's for freedom. I'm for anybody who's for justice. I'm for anybody who's for equality. I'm not for anybody who tells me to sit around and wait for mine. I'm not for anybody who tells me to turn the other cheek when a cracker is busting up my jaw. I'm not for anybody. I'm not for anybody who tells black people to be nonviolent while nobody is telling white people to be nonviolent. So I just say in my conclusion, I know I'm in the church and I probably shouldn't be talking like this, but but Jesus himself, he was ready to turn the synagogue inside out and upside down when things weren't going right. In fact, in the book of Revelation, they got Jesus sitting on a sword with sitting on a horse with a sword in his hand, getting ready to go into action. But they don't tell you or me about that Jesus. They only tell you and me about that peaceful Jesus. They never let you get down to the end of the book. They keep you up there where everything is, you know, nonviolent. No, go read the whole book. And when you get in Revelation, you find that even Jesus' patience ran out. And when his patience ran out, he got the whole situation straightened out. He picked up the sword. So, I believe that there are some white people who might be sincere. But I think they should prove it. And you can't prove it to me by singing with me. You can't prove it to me by being nonviolent. No. You can prove it by recognizing the law of justice. And the law of justice is, as you sow, so must you reap. The law of justice is, he who kills by the sword shall be killed by the sword. This is justice. Now, if you are with us, all I say is, make the same kind of contribution with us in our struggle for freedom that all white people have always made when they were struggling for their own freedom. And your freedom was you were struggling for your freedom in the Revolutionary War, when your own Patrick Henry said liberty or death, and George Washington got the cannons out. And all the rest of them that you taught me to worship as my heroes, they were fighters, they were warriors. But now when the time comes for our freedom, you want to reach back in the bag and grab somebody who's nonviolent and peaceful and forgiving and long-suffering. I don't go for that. No. I say that a black man's freedom is as valuable as a white man's freedom. And I say that a black man has the right to do whatever is necessary to get his freedom that other human beings have done to get their freedom. Just a moment. And I say that you and I will never get our freedom nonviolently and patiently and lovingly. We will never get it until we let the world know that as other human beings have laid down their lives for freedom and also taken life for freedom, that you and I are ready and willing and equipped and qualified to do the same thing.
We likely are going to have to leave it there. I'm not able to play the rest of this clip. And of course, you all know Pacifica stands for peace, and we are committed, of course, to nonviolence. But the words of Malcolm X really helping so many to understand what is happening on the streets today. We are out of time. I'd like to thank all of today's guests. Today's show produced by me, that's Margaret Press. God, I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team. Our audio engineer today is Kiana Williams, our assistant producer Romero Funes. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Y'all stay safe now.
Somebody help me, set me free. I can't take this new reality. How much longer can it be? Where's the humanity? I look around and all I see, masked faces staring at me. Keep your distance, don't touch me, get your hands off my teepee. Somebody save my sanity, the COVID killer's coming after me. How much longer will it be? Where's the humanity? I'm sick and tired of staying at home. Even worse, I live alone. Gotta get out, I need to roam. You can't shake hands on the phone. I need to touch, I need to feel, I need to hug a friend for real. I'm not down for this new deal. I'm not down for this new deal. The COVID killer keeps piling it on. Counting the dead goes on and on. We gotta stay safe, gotta be strong. Ride this out no matter how long. There's no borders, there's no walls. Alone together, we stand, we fall. Around the world, hear the call. Alone together, we stand, we fall. Somebody help me, set me free. I can't take this new reality. How much longer can it be? Where's the humanity? Somebody save my sanity. The COVID killer's coming after me. How much longer will it be? Where's the humanity? Thank you.
Destination set. Planning route. Two. Hackney Down Station. Hackney.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience.